Welcome to this week's episode of the CPG View, the number one CPG information source for global omnichannel leaders.
All right, Sky, welcome back to this week's episode of the CPG View. So excited to keep this going with you. Before we dive in, just to tee up, we had part one that aired in the last week or two. Tremendous feedback from the community and excited to dive in here.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for having me back, Don.
Of course. Hey, wanted to ask you, as you know, many of us are going into budgeting season. I thought we'd pick up and start there. These questions of how much I invest in retail media and what is the return is top of mind for a lot of folks. How are you and the team at Incremental approaching this question of budgeting for brands that you all work with?
Yeah, so budget planning and forecasting at its core requires a clear and accurate understanding of how investments drive incremental growth, right? So growth that could only come through advertising. So that connection between investment and incremental growth is really central to everything we do. We've put it in our name, right? And it's foundational to our own scenario planning and forecasting tools, right? That allow you to basically simulate different levels of budget, different investment strategies, and you see how much incremental growth that would yield you. So it's front and central to everything we do. Again, I think the key aspect here is there are a lot of different ways to approach budget setting and forecasting. At its core, there needs to be some measure of incrementality. Otherwise, the risk is you increase investments and that ends up subsidizing organic growth, right? You know, you've seen this time and time again, probably. You increase your investment, your marketing metrics like ROAS go up, but the P&L doesn't lie, right? You know, top line revenue stays consistent. So, you know, it's super important that any attempt at scenario planning really does have at its core this sense of how my investments driving truly incremental growth for the business.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point. I mean, many of us have been in those situations on the operator side where, you know, let's say you invest $10 million in media, or for easy numbers, let's say you have $100 million business and you invest $10 million in media, and you know your agency or your partner, whomever, you know, convinces you or you decide to invest more, and you know your metrics improve, your return on ad spend improves. But to your point, you look at the P&L and you look at year two or the you know next period, and it's not more than $100 million. It's still $100 million, and it's like this isn't adding up. And I think that's ultimately, I think, part of the beauty of why you all were created, and to your point, it's in your name, Incremental, is, you know, we're not in the business of horse trading here. You know, it's 1 + 1 = 3. We're not really trying to just invest for investment's sake. So yeah, you bring up a really good point. You know, and I guess just to double click on that a little bit, you know, we've been put in a position as operators where, you know, in my past life on, you know, managing, you know, $1 billion+ P&L of consumables or durables or in private equity, really doesn't matter. It's not sector specific, but you know, let's say you have to keep our math going here, $100 million business, and you've invested typically 5% in terms of retail media, and we're being in position by our agency partners and those in maybe the community. Hey, you need to invest more. Benchmarks are 10%. So you invest 10. But I guess the question is, if that increased investment level is to take place, why are we in a position where we're not showing true incrementality on the brand side? Any thoughts there?
Yeah. So I think it's symptomatic of the need for better data, right? You know, your budget planning is really limited by the data that you have available. I don't think it's bad decision-making, right, by the operators. I think they've got fantastic frameworks for thinking about this problem. But if you've got not the ideal data flowing into that decision-making framework, that's going to limit your ability to make accurate forecasts and make those investments and see the incremental growth behind them. And in retail media, I think a lot of it has to do with how retail media is predominantly being measured today, which is through effectively last touch attribution, which doesn't separate coincidence from causality. And what I mean by that is not just did we expose someone who happened to convert, but did that exposure actually cause them to convert in the first place? Would that have only have happened had I reached them with advertising? And that lack of incrementality or causality, right, in the measurement of retail media is what I think it's making it so difficult for, you know, e-commerce leaders to make these investment decisions and actually see the growth actually come on the back end of it, right?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And, you know, but even as we think about this, this is not, you know, budget planning is not a new process for many, or really probably any of us that have been in this space and you've been running a business for some time. Why does it seem like such a challenge today?
Yeah, so I think it's a challenge in retail media because the measurement toolbox we as marketers have developed over the last 60, 70 years actually struggles when you try to apply it as is to retail media. So we've built this fantastic toolbox, but the problems of measuring retail media are somewhat unique, right?
And, you know, you just mentioned something there. I wanted to see if you could provide a little color. You mentioned measurement toolbox. What do you see in that toolbox?
Yeah. So at a high level, I see three types of media measurement tools: direct attribution, econometrics, and experimentation. Again, I think it's really important to remember that each of these tools has their own job. Each of them brings value. It's about finding the sort of the right tool for the job to be done. And if we just isolate the job to be done right now, at least, to budget planning and forecasting within retail media, each of those three tools, again, wasn't purpose-built for retail media. And that creates, I think, some friction when applying them. So if you look at, you know, direct attribution, which, you know, at its core is really the tracking of an individual over time, the exposures that they receive, and then the purchase at the end of it, and then using some rule set to assign credit across that sort of chain of exposure. So last touch attribution, the last touch in that chain gets all the credit. You've got, you know, multi-touch where, you know, you might give a fraction of the credit to each of those touches in the chain. So incredibly granular approach to measurement. And the things it does really well are where you need granularity. So creative performance, time of day, ad placement level. You know, the struggle when applying it to something like budget setting or overall campaign efficacy is the combination of walled gardens and privacy in retail media make it really difficult to develop a complete picture of all those touch points for a consumer, right? Really, the only place you can begin to do this is an AMC, but that's just within the Amazon universe, right? You're never going to be able to commingle Walmart and Amazon data, right? I don't think they're going to ever get to that point of being friendly. So that fragmentation, you know, really makes it a less reliable tool for overall campaign efficacy and sort of identifying points of diminishing return, which might guide something like budget setting. The second tool I see in that toolbox is really a suite of statistical techniques, sort of underpinning things like market mix models, right? You know, P&G sort of pioneered these back in the 60s and 70s, and they've now become incredibly commonplace, right? Facebook and Google have basically released open source versions of these. And again, the job these tools do really well is, you know, top-down resource allocation. When they're calibrated properly, they're fantastic for overall budget planning, but they struggle a little bit in retail media because of speed and granularity. Because they're not just trying to plan and optimize retail media, but, you know, your linear TV buys, your sponsorships, they require a bunch more data inputs, which slow down their ability to deliver results in sort of near real time. And then the flip side, the granularity side, the sheer number of variables that have to go into these models limits their ability to get down to a campaign level within retail media. So, you know, given most retail media is delivered at a SKU level, you know, a given brand might have 150, 200 different SKUs and at least that many campaigns. So, you know, they're really good at maybe giving a sense of incrementality at the overall platform level, but where the rubber meets the road, again, they're sort of not designed to get down to that granularity. And then sort of the last tool in our toolkit is experiments, right? So, you know, basically two flavors of experimental design. You've got randomized control testing, or, you know, RCT, where you basically create, you know, like a laboratory, right? Two randomized groups of consumers. You give one advertising exposure, you withhold treatment from the other, and you measure the delta in the behavior. The alternative is things like geo-testing, like matched market testing, right? You try to find two markets now that look and behave similar enough, and you blanket one in advertising and withhold it from the other. Again, experiments are sort of the gold standard for establishing a causal link between advertising and sales performance. Everyone should be running them. The challenge with taking these approaches and trying to apply them to retail media is, you know, randomized control tests and geotesting aren't actually able to be operationalized in most forms of retail media. So if you look at things like search, brands can't independently withhold treatment in search. I can't tell you, don't show these sponsored product ads to this group, only show them to this group. The second is, again, sort of operational, right? When you think about, again, the sheer number of campaigns in a single retail media platform, trying to run 150, 200 different tests across these campaigns can become, you know, operationally very difficult. And again, this is to say, don't use one methodology or don't use another. It's to highlight that, you know, the set of tools we sort of inherited as marketers somewhat struggles when we have tried to apply it to retail media. And we need sort of conversations around how to develop new tools or repackage the tools we've been given to really apply them to the needs of retail media.
Yeah, you know, it begs a really interesting question. If you just take a step back and we think about this, we think about how big e-commerce is globally. And again, numbers, you know, can be debated, but let's just say 7 trillion. You've got 3 trillion of that 7 trillion of e-commerce in China. You've got 1 trillion, give or take, in the US. Then the closest to that is, you know, 200 and 200, which you go Japan and the UK. And so there's that. Then we have the global penetration rates, e-commerce of the total. And we look in China, it's north of 50%. We look in the UK, it's north of 30%. And in the US, it's 15%, give or take. So we don't have to be that incredibly bright to know where this thing is going. And I think to your point, the approach you mentioned to the toolbox is very helpful, because I think, you know, I just think about this. And, you know, when I started in e-commerce, call it 10 years ago, let's just say of 20 years experience, 10 years ago started in e-commerce is when it was really nascent. You know, the old rules, they still applied. You know, it was the majority of the investments were being spent in, you know, traditional paid media flights on TV, linear. And it was a different time. And I think now we're in a position where we have $7 trillion of e-commerce global opportunity. We have, depending on the study we look at, between 60 and 75% of consumers start their purchase online. We really need to have well-crafted strategies and corresponding execution with regards to media to win. And the bookmark on that for me, as I think about it, is, you know, those that are requesting funds for media investments, they have a management team to report to. They have a board to report to, or they maybe own the business. And I think your point with regards to providing true incrementality of that spend is more important now than it's ever been. But I think it's actually going to become more important as we go from 15% to 20% to 25 to 30. Maybe we don't ever get to 50 in the US, but we certainly know where this is going.
Yeah, I think the point of looking at global penetration rates really highlights the fact that we're at the beginning of the cycle, not the end, right? And we need to start investing in developing a toolkit for a world where we might be 30, 40, 50% e-commerce penetration now before we get there and we're sort of stuck working with the tools that we may have inherited in the past. Yeah. So I love that context of, you know, looking at the U.S. penetration rate relative to others. I did a lot of work in South Korea at a previous company. And you've got some categories at 80, 90% penetration. And you get radically different consumer decision-making when you start to cross some of those thresholds. So
that's right.
The point you raise.
Yeah, that's right. The South Korea is, depending on the study and the time, it's either second or third in terms of global pen rate of total. So yeah, totally agree. I guess, you know, Sky, just it does beg the question, you know, everything you've mentioned and what you and I were just discussing. So how is incremental approaching the measurement of retail media, given all of the puts and takes you and I just discussed?
Yeah. So I'm a big believer in having open discussions on methodology. It pushes the entire industry forward when we can be, you know, swapping and comparing notes on how we're solving these problems. again, I think we're just at the beginning of this journey. So that type of knowledge sharing is essential. So our own approach is we use an ensemble model. So we actually borrow from all three of those techniques or tools I just described. So we use econometric techniques because they're great at controlling for non-retail media spend and external factors like seasonality or holidays. We also make use of some of the really unique deterministic data that's specific to retail media, things like changes in keyword ranking, inventory levels, SKU level velocity, take rates on promotions. And we also incorporate the use of designed and synthetic tests, right, as validation and calibration. At its core is this idea of progressive learning, right? Let's treat the P&L as the source of truth and effectively progressively predict and compare ourselves to the P&L until we feel really good about the model's ability to actually understand how our investments move the needle at that level.
Very interesting. Yeah, I like that. Progressively compare ourselves to the P&L as it evolves. I love that. Super helpful. I think we could probably go for days on this topic, to be honest with you. I guess last question for you before we wrap up. You mentioned incorporating non-retail media into the model. I'm interested why you think this is important. Before you provide your perspective there, also just thinking for those in our community that are likely listening to this, that, as we think about many of us started in e-commerce at various levels, we've seen if we've been in CPGs or durables sectors, we've seen a shift from national media budgets that maybe a brand marketing team would have managed to typically a trade marketing, a revenue growth management function would manage shopper funding. We're seeing a big switch over in terms of models of who owns what in terms of ways of working and roles and responsibilities. In some businesses, the media dollars for retail media sit within e-commerce. In some businesses, they sit within traditional brick and mortar and traditional trade funding. I would say we're not at a position where it's standardized yet across the board, and would be interested now with that frame up of why you think it's important to incorporate non-retail media into the model.
Yeah, so it actually echoes some of the organizational kind of questions that you raised, right? So we think including non-retail media into the planning of retail media is important for two reasons. One is actually from a model accuracy standpoint. It drastically improves the accuracy of our models when we have the context of how non-retail media is being invested, right? So, a lot of product discovery still happens on, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. That changes the profile of traffic being driven to the e-commerce marketplaces in the first place, which affects the efficacy of your retail media spend. So from a model accuracy, it's important to account for that. The second, actually, I think this gets back to the organizational design and really the question of planning, is you want to be able to scenario plan your retail media in a way that's aware of non-retail media spend, right? So to your point, if the brand team's investing in new product launches and using CTV, linear TV, out of home, whatever it might be, you want to be aware of that in your planning because you can then take advantage of the synergies, right? You can build a more full functioning funnel when you've got that visibility into how the levers and marketing levers you might control interact with other levers that might sit elsewhere across the organization.
Yeah, it's a really great point. And it's such a topical point of conversation for so many of us in the space now, especially as the e-commerce teams and many businesses are working more than ever. I mean, perhaps they're even joined of brick and mortar and e-commerce. I know several, multi-billion-dollar CPGs or durables that it's actually still separate. I think it depends on the evolution of the business and where they're at in the maturity cycle and those things. But I think to your point, this is more critical now than ever, and it's going to become more and more pronounced as time goes on and this evolution continues. I know we're going to have episode 3, which I'm definitely looking forward to, Sky. Anything you'd like to say in closing before we wrap up today's episode of CPG View?
No, and stick with the theme. I'll wish everyone good luck in the planning season.
Thanks, Scott.
All right. Take care. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the CPG View, the number one CPG information source for global omnichannel leaders. Mm-hmm.